Where do we go from here? That's the question, and that's the name of this podcast. I'm your host, Karanja Aido Ajanaku, the associate publisher and executive editor of the new Tri-State Defender. When District 7 Shelby County Commissioner Tammy Sawyer stepped into the race for mayor of Memphis last week, she made that announcement first in the new Tri-State Defender. Here is my conversation with her.
Yes, as of today, I am in the running to be the next mayor of Memphis.
The mayor of Memphis?
Yes, sir.
Why now?
I'm running now because when I see our city and I see our people, and I look at the conversations that we are having at high level of leadership, it doesn't incorporate what is next for the impoverished, people of color, women. Every person is not considered in our vision for Memphis. And so I'm running now because I believe that we can't afford to continue to repeat the mistakes of the past, nor can we survive off basic leadership.
So, obviously, you have become a well-known figure. Some, as the word has sort of been buzzing out that you might be running, I said, well, yeah, but it's too early. What is going to be and has been your response to the too early?
I don't think that there's ever a good time to make change. And I believe that we are in a situation in our city where we can't wait for change. We are facing the evaporation of black wealth from the country by 2030. By 2030, we'll have $0 of net wealth in the black community. But when we look at the opportunity indicators for where Memphis is, that means that we are going to lose any of those economic advantages and wealth collectively in the next 3 to 4 years. And so we have to get serious about policy and programs and support that recognize that 50% of our kids, Dr. Janaku, are born below the line of poverty. And we don't have those conversations. We're not investing in schools. 0% of our city budget goes to education. And so I don't believe that we have another 5 years to risk our people.
So there are some who would say, well, yeah, but it seems like there's some momentum going on relative to economic development, particularly downtown. Do you see that economic development, or do you have a different take on it?
Economic development is great. I work a lot with youth, and so one of my favorite schools to visit in my district is Kingsbury High. I developed a relationship with a few students there. And I asked them to make a list of what they want to see changed in their community. So one of the students says to me, I want my streets to be cleaned up. But when I walk to school, there's trash everywhere. So I said, well, you know, whose responsibility is that? He goes, well, I guess it's mine. I can clean up the street, you know. And I'm like, should you have to? I said, you live off Summer. Have you ever driven down Union? And he gave me a blank stare. And I said, do you know where Union is? So then I asked the entire classroom, how many of you have ever driven down Union Avenue? And in a classroom of 40 kids, about 5 of them could tell me how to get from their high school off of Summer to Union Avenue. So development downtown is great, but it doesn't reach the majority of our city. We don't have time for trickle-down economics to be the way to go. 1% of the population is benefiting from this development. We can get excited about what's happening downtown and say, there's going to be new shopping and there's going to be more scooters, but the kids at Kingsbury aren't going to get to see that. The kids at Kirby aren't going to be able to wait an hour for a bus to get down there and enjoy that. And then we have to debate with developers about minority and women business percentages. And so where is the investment in our communities? What impact is this development going to have? Small businesses are the basis of economic development that I want to focus on. You know, momentum for 1% is not momentum for Memphis. Momentum for Memphis looks like programs and infusions and support, economic support for small business owners and entrepreneurs. We're a resilient and creative city, but we don't always have the resources we need for our ideas to really grow and shine and become profitable. And we've seen it happen in other cities, and it can happen here, where instead of being excited about new buildings and development, we can get excited about how many small businesses are really popping up, because that money actually lands back in the community.
And so are you saying that when you look at what we're doing now, you don't see that type of investment in small business?
I don't see that type of investment going into small business, no.
I'm going to ask you a series of questions from different people that I reached out. So one of the questions in several different forms is how will you address the issue of public safety?
Yep. I believe that public safety has to be addressed in a way that takes us away from a tough on crime stance. Putting more people in jail, being tougher on crime, has yet to solve crime anywhere, and let alone Memphis. If anything, with the high levels of poverty that we have, having a tough on crime, lock 'em up stance of policing creates even more dire straits for people. When, you know, being put in jail, you get all kinds of fees, you lose your job, your rent doesn't get paid. And so we're creating this ecosystem of where most of the crimes that we're seeing are crimes of poverty. So we have to address public safety in a more holistic way. I want to take the community policing program that we've seen people like Major Green operate out in Fraser and make that a broader model for the city. What does it look like for our police officers to work where they live? What does it look like for our police officers to not criminalize our youth, but mentor our youth while also keeping us safe? Education is also public safety. Mm-hmm. And right now, 0% of our budget goes to education. So instead of infusing money into jails and, you know, campaigns about being tough on crime, take some of that money and put it back into the schools, so that when a child walks through the door, he feels this is the place where I'm supposed to be every day.
So that sounds like an answer to this one of these questions here. Will you divest from the prison industrial complex and invest in K-12 public education?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is one of the strongest, not one of the strongest, that is a major part of why I'm running. Because you're going to go where you're directed to go. Mm-hmm. And right now we are directing our energy and our money to say we need more beds in jails. We need more police. All we hear people talk about is, I need to hire more officers, I need to hire more officers. But what about more teachers and more school counselors and more trauma-informed advocates and more principals?
Mm-hmm. Well, somewhat associated to what we're talking about now is this question. What plans do you have to reduce the recidivism rate for African Americans leaving prison and coming back home to Memphis mm-hmm. with no job skills?
I think it's a big mistake that the city has decided to disinvest from the Memphis Shelby County Office of Reentry. Programs such as Miss Core are vital. When people return home from being incarcerated, their family may or may not be in the same place they were. They don't recognize the community. They don't understand the technology. And so we need these community programs in place to help folks reconnect, not just to work, but to our community, so that they feel they have a place here, so that the decisions that they make for the rest of their life are ones where of value to them and where they live. And so one way I would do that is to reconnect with Miss Core. Look at programs like the Black Patrol, Lifelines to Success in Fraser. How does the city partner with them stronger? And just there are so many community programs that aren't just doing intervention, are also doing prevention. And so we should have these resources. People should know what these resources are. Where can I send my son because he needs a mentor? And he's one day away from getting in trouble, right? And so I believe that getting resources that reconnect our incarcerated friends and family to our community is as vitally important as preventing them from being incarcerated in the first place.
Here's a question about courage. Will you have courage to take stands against Memphis's corporate community if it means lifting the socioeconomic status of the poorest Memphians, and if so, how?
Will I have courage? I have that courage. That's why I'm running. Mm-hmm. Because we have to be able to stand up against the business, what do they call it?
Corporate
community.
Yes.
Because it's not the business community. Because I believe in business, right? I believe in small business. I believe in economic opportunity. What I don't believe in is in corporate welfare that is given at, you know, in a way that we're taking tax dollars away from programs and benefits for the community. But that's allowing, again, a very small percentage of our population to continue to grow the wealth gap in Memphis. And so, as a commissioner thus far, I've had that courage. When Union Row came up, I questioned whether or not we should vote for this. And when they came back a second time and asked for, what, $60 million for a parking garage downtown, I said no. I did not vote yes for that. And regardless of where we find these pockets of money, whatever fund we say they in, whether we can say, at the end of the day, the way that the city generates money is from some sort of taxes. And we are continuing to give tax money into the pockets and developments that won't be accessible to most of us. And so I would say to you know, corporate interest, Memphis has to, right now, uphold and stand with its strongest resource, which is our people, all of our people.
Yeah, that really ties into this same person's next question is, what is your plan to invest in people as opposed to projects, which I think you've addressed a little bit already.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we talk about libraries being open longer, but let's take it a step further. Libraries can be open longer, and also we have a strong creative, one of the things Memphis is known for is our artists and our performers. We have a very strong creative community. And those people come out of the Foot Homes and the South Memphises and the Hickory Hills. So take our libraries and put paint in there. Put a DJ booth, right? Make it somewhere where the youth will actually walk in. So investing in people means giving people the resources to do something more every day, something different, right? Expose themselves, learn, grow. And so investing in people is my number one priority. And very often we can create programs, even when I'm talking about how 1% of business is currently impacted by our momentum or our development, our programs generally could be the same. Because you might start a new nonprofit because you have an idea and then you employ one person and you impact 10 people that year. And so it's going to be important that our policies reach critical numbers of people. And that's my belief, is that we need a leader, right, who is looking at the fact that our city, 60% of our city, is living paycheck to paycheck. And needs something to make that different.
I've heard you say that some of your fellow commissioners ask, well, you bring this up all the time about the poverty. We're not talking about that right now. Aren't you off topic? And so just respond to that for the record here.
We should always be talking about poverty. We can't get away from conversations about race and class, because we are not at a place where we have economic, educational, or just opportunity equity. On our 200th birthday, on our bicentennial of this city, we are still a city that is rife with inequality. You can drop a pinpoint anywhere in the city and the racial wealth gap tells you that story. Upwards to a $70,000 difference in wealth between black and white people. That's not right. And we can't continue to ignore that. And so as a government, it's important that we operate with that in mind. So I bring it up on the commission because we're talking about where we're putting money. All day, every day. Almost everything we pass has a dollar amount attached to it. And that's why I bring up poverty. That's why I bring up race. Because I'm saying, yep, we can get $500,000 for this, but who's it going to impact? And if at the end of a year, we total up the impact of the money we've divvied out, and it only impacts a certain group of people, wealthy, white men, right? Where's the equity in that? We have to redistribute wealth in our community.
Well, when you say redistribute wealth, people's heads spin around, right? So can you just help their heads start spinning? Why should they not be afraid about that term, redistribution of wealth?
Yeah, because we're not taking anything from anyone, right? You can still have whatever you have today, but know that we can't allow for the same five people to go after contracts, right? We can't allow for the same streets to be the only streets that are paved. Redistribution of wealth isn't just about who gets the checks either. One thing I'm looking at is the equity budget style. We've seen it in Santa Fe, we've seen it in Charlottesville, we've seen it in other cities, where they take a list of what communities need the most support, and they start their funding there. They take a list of all of the streets in the city that need to be paved, and instead of saying, we make sure we pave Walnut Grove four times a year, we say, Watkins hasn't been paved in 6 years, let's start there. Why aren't we thinking about how we pave our streets at a minimum from an equity lens? Then what communities we fund and how we fund them, right? Then when we get back into education, how we're supporting schools directly. And so redistribution of wealth is also a redistribution of resources, of people, of energy, of time. And that will allow us to reduce this wealth gap between blacks and whites, and honestly, Latinx people and white people as well. Mm-hmm. In a city that's almost 75% people of color, right, it's backwards and unfair. And we have the opportunity and responsibility to change that for the next 200 years.
You mentioned schools there, and this question obviously has a tone to it, but I'm going to read it as it is. It says, all reliable indicators suggest our public schools are not preparing Memphis's children for productive citizenry. How will you address this as mayor?
Number one is reinvesting in schools. 0% right now is earmarked for education. So that says that we don't care what type of student, what type of graduate, what type of future worker we're producing. I care. I care because I have cousins who are going through the school system now, who struggle with literacy, who don't know what they want to do when they graduate. So that impacts my family. That impacts everyone, right? And so reinvesting in schools for me doesn't just mean we write SES a blank check. It means we look at SES, ASD, our charter schools, and we say, what's the best way we can give our budget to support advancing education so that when our kids graduate school, they're able to get a job. They're able to finish their first year of classes, right? They're able to go away to Fisk and be in the same classes their classmates are in and not having to take introductory level courses or repeating classes they should have taken in high school. Making sure that how can we invest money so that SES, the number of substitute teachers teaching classes in SES goes down to impact recruitment and retention of our educators. Because I'm sure, you know, like you, I remember, you know, I had the same teachers in my school from seventh grade to high school. And when I go back today, they're still there. And that builds a community, right? So retaining teachers is as important as recruiting them. So reinvesting in education means looking at all of the ways that we can make a critical impact on what K through 12 education looks like. We can't just focus on pre-K, right? Because then we're ignoring a whole generation of kids who didn't get pre-K. So we have to make swift investments and intentional investments in education.
So built into that is an intention, I take it, to engage the school board and in a collaboration that period.
Yeah. I don't want to recreate the wheel, but the city should be working with the school board to support what is needed in our schools. And also that means the same as but the city should be working with the school board, right? City should be a stakeholder. Right now, the school board, the city's not a stakeholder. But our population in SES schools is majority, almost what, 90, 95% live inside the city of Memphis. And so our city government should be a player, should be a stakeholder. And additionally, another way to talk about how we impact education is knowing that we've not provided an education that allows an adult to live a sustained and thriving life. We have to look at adult literacy as well. And so it's really important to me that we don't just say, okay, we're reinvesting in K through 12, but 5 to 10 years of graduates are just out there with no supports. So supporting, programming, partnering with Southwest.
Let's say that you get in, and so we're looking at your leadership team. What does its structure and the diversity of it look like?
Well, it's definitely diverse. You know, if I get in, Dr. Jonathan, I would be the first woman elected mayor. I would be the first woman elected to a high office in Memphis or Shelby County. And I think that on our 200th anniversary as a city and a county, that would be exciting, and it's also a bit sad. And it's time for us to break those ceilings. I think the key things I look for in a leadership team are passion and commitment to our community, first and foremost. Second, innovation. We know we can't solve our issues and challenges with business as usual. So let's innovate and reach people where they are. Right. And third, you know, I'm also looking at, I definitely do want a diverse leadership team. I'm going to be looking for women. I'm going to be looking for people of color who don't identify as black to join us as well. We have the fastest growing immigrant population in the South. Definitely the fastest in Tennessee. Where is our bilingual support? How are we providing services to Spanish speakers who haven't learned English yet but need critical city services, right? Who are our liaisons to different communities? We have a vibrant Muslim community in North Memphis, right? Our LGBTQ community. So my leadership team will look like our city, which is beautiful and diverse and multi-layered and intersectional.
Let's jump to public transportation and modern. I think you mentioned it a little bit. How important do you see that? What plans might you have for modern?
Yeah, you know, I lived in D.C. about a decade in my 20s, and public transportation is one of the first things that people notice Memphis is lacking in. And I mean, I know people who haven't been able to take a job here because they've lived in cities where they've never had to drive. And they don't want to learn how to drive. They want to be able to take the bus or the train, and they can't understand why they can't get on their phone, pull up an app, find a train, find a bus, you know, and do what they need to do to get where they need to get. Our wait times for our buses are unacceptable. The fact that we aren't servicing the neighborhoods that need to use the bus the most, unacceptable. And so when I look at public transportation, I'm looking at MATA being a priority and MATA's modernization being a priority.
Go ahead.
We don't just need to spend money on trolleys and get excited because that will, you know, boost tourism, because once again, we can be a number one city to visit and number 45th on quality of life for the people who live here.
Mm-hmm.
That's that gap I'm speaking of. And so MATA Transit is going to be important. Working with groups like the Memphis Bus Riders Union is going to be important, and working with students, you know, so I support the initiative to work with SES to get all students free bus passes. I've seen it work in other cities. They do it in Chicago, they do it in DC, they might even do it in Atlanta. It takes a burden off the school budget for needing to provide bus services. And it's important because the more we teach our youth to use the bus when they're still in school, they'll continue to use it as a resource when they're adults and working. And if we are a city that truly values transit, everybody should be riding on it, right? Right now we ignore transit because we think MATA is for poor people. MATA is for people who can't afford to get a car. But really, as we're moving into this 21st century thought, MATA is a way for us to lower air emissions, right? MATA is a way for us to reduce clogging on the highway and on the streets. And so there's so many reasons for us to look at transit as a priority. And those are the reasons why it would be important to me.
So bouncing a little bit from that, business and economic jobs, businesses, we do have to have more of them. So, and I understand what you're saying about small businesses. We do have to recruit businesses here. Help us see you relative to that responsibility.
So I do believe that it's important to recruit businesses here. But when businesses choose not to come here, we don't resolve the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
I can't come here from Seattle and put my kids into a segregated, underfunded education system. I can't come here from New York and have to buy a car and I've never driven in my entire life, right? I can't come here from Atlanta and, you know, live in a segregated neighborhood, you know, not be welcome in certain parts of the city, you know, watch the TV every day and see crime reports. And so there's so much that I can't move my business from Denver,
mm-hmm.
and look at the literacy rate and, mm-hmm. and believe that there's somebody for me to hire,
mm-hmm.
right? I've got 500 jobs. Who's going to do these jobs?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to resolve the things that are the reasons people choose not to be here in the first place. Number one, education. Number two, opportunity and equity. Transit is on there. I mean, there's so many things that we say, oh, well, that just what ended up not being for us, or they didn't hang around and stay, you know, they moved on, it's cool, we'll get another business. But I can almost assure you, Dr. Janaku, that when major businesses are looking at the ecosystem of Memphis, what they're seeing missing are the same things that we're missing every day.
Mm.
And so if we improve the city, if we take a social leadership stance, we are going to have the same level of recruitments.
A social leadership stance?
Yeah. Where we're looking at the social issues of the city, mm-hmm. and the way that we're leading.
Mm-hmm. So you are often characterized as an activist,
mm-hmm.
right? So how do you go forward with that background and label relative to being mayor? How do you factor that in?
Activists have been mayor for a long time. Mayor Jackson was an activist. Activists have, you know, President Obama was an activist. And I think that sometimes we look at activist as a dirty word, and it shouldn't be, because act, right? An activist acts. I'm an actor. Like, I move issues into the forefront. I drive conversation. I drive change. And isn't that what we want in a mayor?
Mm-hmm. So What is the biggest misconception that you think that people might have about you that you think you would have to address running for mayor?
I think the biggest misconception is probably to the point of the last question, that I'm radical or unable to work with broad coalitions. But what I know and what I've been able to build and what I've been able to do in Memphis and Shelby County is supported by people from all walks of life, rich, poor, black, white, Latinx, Asian, LGBTQ, straight, Christian, Muslim. And so I think what people would be afraid of or concerned about is she's not going to be able to get anything done.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And that's just not true. That's not true. I've gotten a lot done. Since I've been home, I've been able to change conversations on the commission since I've been elected. And I'm connected to a national movement for this way of leading. And we are opening the doors to the city for people to come here and see us as leaders in a new civil rights movement, leaders in a new way of investing in our people. That should be here. All across the South, all around us, this is happening. Lumumba and Jackson, Frank Scott in Little Rock, Randall Woodfin in Birmingham, right? They talk about the same things I talk about. And Memphis considers itself a leader of the South, and yet we're afraid to elect leadership that puts a mirror up to us and says, let's fix us first. And so there is a coalition. I have a very strong coalition locally and nationally that I believe will bring opportunity to the city in the way that serves us best.
How do you win? Okay, I mean, what, people ask about money. I mean, how are you going to finance it? What's your strategy for winning this race?
1 second. We started with me sharing that the biggest asset Memphis has is our people. We build a people movement. We have a people's movement. People want a candidate, again, that is listens to them, isn't surveilling them, right? Or isn't telling them to pull up their pants, but is saying, I see what you're challenged by, and I want to fix it with you, right? Let's do this together. That's what is going to inspire people to turn out for me, for us. And so I might not raise as much as the mayor. I might not raise as much as Doc or any other candidate in the race. But what they spend in money, we have in people. And so when the receipts are done, I believe that we will have more people at the polls checking this movement, checking my name, ready to get to work together on October 4th. And then just as far as the funding, I'll just say again to the fact that we are behind the eight ball with political change. And so you are seeing the funding of progressive, people-centered movements in every city. And so there's opportunity for that support to come here with me in the race.
Outside of Memphis.
Yeah. But within Memphis, whether it's asking, I will knock on every door. I will knock on every door and ask for your vote and a pledge for $20.19 a month. You know, Obama is my hero, right? So if you can give me $20.19 a month while I sit and talk to you about reducing your MLGW bill, because that's what I believe needs to happen. $20.19 a month is $100 towards our campaign, and you get a whole block of that, you get a whole neighborhood of that, you know. And so people power, small investments from our community will build into the money that we need. And we don't have to pay major consultants. Our consultant is the voice of the city.
And so there you have it. Shelby County Commissioner Tammy Sawyer is running for mayor, seeking, as she would say, to change the tenor of the conversation. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up.
Thank you.